Hello and welcome to the official Scottish Rugby podcast, together with Royal Bank of Scotland. Mossy and I are at Scotson today, diaries permitting. It's a wee bit less breezy than it was on Sunday, Mossy.
A bit more snowy, certainly on the way through, but just a tad less windy. But that was pretty unique. We'll come to that. But the conditions were utterly unique. Nothing I've ever experienced before in all the however many decades we've been involved in rugby and at Murrayfield. Now. It was pretty unique. A massive effect in the game. Just a total effect in the game, really. But as I say, we'll come to that in due course.
Well, let's start on the Friday night. The Scotland under 20s fixture. You were there. You watched it. How did the lads get on?
Yeah, it was up at Myerside. Good, over 3,000 people there. Good event, and it ended up 21-17 to England. So it was. In some ways, from Scotland's perspective, similar to the national team's game in Dublin the week before, Scotland had all the pressure, most of the territory. England had kind of three telling moments that led to three tries, and other than that, it was Scotland who were in control. So it was really frustrating, difficult to walk away from that with a loss. The three tries that England scored were pretty good tries, and they came after gaining momentum with the first phase carry. And once they got momentum, and it was only three times in the game I think they had momentum, they got in behind, stressed Scotland, and multi-phase tries scored.
What conditions like?
It was fine. It was cold. It was really good Friday night. Pretty calm in all honesty. A wee bit windy, but pretty calm for February on a Friday night. And I must say the Scottish lads up front really, really delivered. Their scrum was excellent. Won a couple against the head, pushed England off a couple of scrums. The pack did really, really well. Two or three really dominant scrums early on. Won a scrum against the head by driving over England's ball. Really, really impressive scrum effort. Thomas Lambert, the loose head prop, was excellent. Ewan Ashman scored again. A record try scorer for last year. Hooker, really impressive young player. Darge and Boyle in the back row as abrasive as ever, and I actually thought that a couple of backs did it. Ollie Smith at fullback had a good game, was a threat, and Matt Curry, the outside centre, was excellent with ball in hand, aggressive in defence. So there was a lot of good others played well as well, but those are the guys that really kind of jumped out for me. But a really good effort up front, but similar to, as I say, the game in Dublin with the national side the week before, just couldn't get enough kind of quality execution with the opportunities I had.
I was chatting to Sean Lanine, who's the under-20s head coach at the moment, on Friday, and he was talking about the fact that the last two times England have come up to play Scotland have come out on top. So he'll be disappointed not to get a result, but from what you're saying, it sounds as if there's a lot of positives to take from it as well.
Yeah, we'll be disappointed because it is a game we should have won. The standard of player for England, you know, is obvious. Everybody sees the names that play in the Premiership. Maunder, the nine, who's the captain, who plays at Exeter. Vunipola at 10, who plays at Saracens, starting not only Premiership games, but European games. But, I mean, to be honest, the Scottish lads should have won it. They should have won it in terms of holding possession just close to the line on a couple of occasions. And then, actually, the first try that England scored was a wee bit soft as well. The peeled round the front of the line out. And just isolated kind of one defender in that 5 metre channel. So it was a wee bit soft that, but scored a quality try through Ewan Ashman from a drive, and eventually got a penalty try from just incessant pressure driving them the line out. And a game that the 20 should have won. They'll move out to obviously Italy in 2 weeks' time. Now Italy are third in the table at the moment. They've started down the 20s championship pretty well, beating Wales away, Wales and Wales, and they narrowly lost to France at the weekend there after being, I think, 19-12 up at half time. In France, so they'll be a tough nut to crack.
Now, I know you watch a lot of rugby, but surely you didn't manage to take in the Club 15 game.
That's one I never got. No, I saw the score. I was there the week before, I was at Nannadale, but the game over in Donnybrook was 22-17 to Ireland. So they took the trophy on the aggregate score over the two legs. But I think another, reading what Scott White had said about the head coach, another committed performance and really worthwhile for the players involved in that.
Yeah, we talked about it. It's a real positive to have that opportunity for them to get together as a squad, and yeah, they'll be disappointed with that. But yeah, what a fantastic opportunity, a good opportunity for the coaches as well to be involved at that level. So, Saturday's game, and all that went with it. It was tough conditions. It was really tough. It's difficult to dissect it, I suppose, too much as far as the performance is concerned. I've got to say, overall, the first half, I was probably hindsight disappointed. We didn't go in with any sort of lead. And the weather conditions were so much in Scotland's favour in that first half.
You reckon?
Do you not think so?
I don't even favour anybody, really.
Just because they were so poor, tough.
You might have had the wind behind you at some areas of the field, but not all. And it was swirling, I just think, wasn't it? It's, as it always does, it swirls. And the main pitch at BT Murrayfield, the wind always swirls, but it has to be exceedingly windy, I think, for it to have a massive effect, really, or a significant effect. It can be really windy in the back pitches or walking on the concourse, and then, although you feel the swirl inside, it's not that strong. But as I said in the intro, I've never experienced anything like it.
The really bad ones, I remember being in parts of the pitch and feeling as if the wind was going in one direction and then moving 15 metres and feeling as if it's coming in another direction. When you're standing, for me, it was receiving the kickoffs. Going, I have no idea where it's going to go. I spoke to Magnus Bradbury after the game and he was saying exactly that. Yeah. Like, at times, receiving those high balls, he had no chance. And we talked about it. I mean, it was just about three kicks in a row that they put out in the full, and these are top class kickers.
Yeah, you probably have to change your tactic. I said it in commentary. You know, it is really difficult, but you have to learn from your mistakes at the same time. I think they were kind of asking, it was Ollie Hines, I think, twice in a row, to box kick from the 5 metre channel. Now, even if you're trying to get that kick in field, I don't think you've got enough space to get it in field to allow yourself the ball, unless you hook it, such a terrible kick, you wouldn't have a chase. So I think they should have played one or two phases first. And because defences were covering the backfield so well and reacting to the weather and dropping back, I think one or two phases to try and, if it was possible, I understand.
It's a risk though, isn't it?
It is a risk, but so was kicking it straight out.
Absolutely.
Try and manipulate the space to kick to in some way, shape or form.
It's one of those days where you're almost better not with the ball though. But to your point, you're saying you need to do that in your own terms.
Well, I don't think you go right away and say, right, let's throw the ball about, let's play three or four phases and try and find space. I think you make that decision once you've kicked the ball straight out twice, not four times.
Yeah.
So it is, you know, there's a dab. And I thought Scotland started the second half really well.
Yeah, agreed. It was a 20-minute period.
And it showed.
That was your poorest point as well. Now, you've got to credit Scotland for that.
Yeah, and it showed that you could actually play a little bit. And just not getting points, or the kind of phase of play that led up to what should really have been a penalty for Kyle Sinclair ripping it, was probably one of the best pieces of play, and not to get the reward there was frustrating. But
so hard to get points. How did you feel about the decision making as when to go to the corner? And not just from a Scotland point of view, I'm really surprised with one that Farrell took to the post. It must have been his second one, because they were already three up, and I felt as if they'd worked so hard to get the territory. It was a hard kick. It was at best for me 50-50.
Yeah.
And there was an opportunity to go to the corner on that one. And you probably argue the same from Scotland point of view. But then I know that, like, on the park, when you feel the momentum, it's a different decision to be made.
I think it's a decision that is made on the field in the moment. And you won't get universal agreement. You know, people will believe you should kick the point, and I've said this 100 times and I'll say it again, you don't get the 3 points just for saying the ref you're going to have a shot. You have to kick it. You know what I mean?
How much harder is it though for the kickers with that wind? What would be 70-80%? Does it go down to 20-30%, or is it just difficult to quantify?
I genuinely think in conditions like that, it's a hit or miss. Yeah. It's genuinely hit or miss. You could hit the best kick, strike it perfectly, and it could get nowhere near the sticks. You could miss hit it like a whatever,
low into the wind,
and it somehow it creeps over. Honestly, it's so difficult, and I think you go with the feeling on the field at the time. I was surprised that Farrell took the first one on. I thought it was high, 35, 36 metres out, maybe on the angle. Tough, really tough. I know there was a chain of thought that maybe Scotland should have kicked one or two, or attempted to kick one or two in the first half. I think they got the kind of balance a bit right.
Scotland, the other thing with Scotland, they'll be disappointed with the set piece or the line in particular, the scrum in the last 20 minutes or so. England's
so you tell
finishers,
me,
as they're called, came on and did quite well.
It's obviously near on possible to get any percentage win by throwing towards the tail, not only because of the weather, but also forcing you to throw at the front. The opposition know that. They're going to load it up at the front to make it even harder to win, even if that's the only place you can go to. So what do you do in that circumstance as a line-out caller?
So one thing you'll do is debate and have far more conversations with the nines and tens than you ordinarily have, because depending on where you are in the field, there'll be a play that the backs want to do, and they'll want to win that line-out ball in a certain area. Now, at times, winning at the front makes it very difficult to do, as you well know, very difficult to do things out wide.
But it's better to have the ball, though.
But it's better to have the ball. So for me, in those conditions, the line-out and being able to win the line-out dictates everything. And there has to be adjustments made from that. As far as a wet weather strategy is concerned, the flatter and harder the hooker can throw, the better. So speed balls, trying to get up in the air as quickly as possible, beat the opposite man. Now, that's not just when you see the guys loading up at the front of the line-out, because England are exceptionally good at defending line-outs. So we had to be thinking out the box at times. Now, we did force a couple to the back. They also got up in the air very well. Everything in those conditions slows down marginally, which makes it easier for the defence. But it showed that with the amount of opportunities that were given to Scotland in that first 20 minutes after the start of the second half, set piece been a wee bit stronger, there's probably more opportunities to take them then.
Because I was thinking as well, again, we said in commentary, you get a penalty, you celebrate the penalty, but actually the immediate assumption you're going to kick to the corner or kick to touch just gives you another problem, the problem of the line out. So do you take another scramble, do you tap and go, or do you mix it up? And I just felt as if, you know, there was no easy answer and there was no easy out because the conditions were so windy. But I do think that the start of the second half was good. I think England, ironically, we're talking about line out, their line out in that final third of the game, they got about three or four or five in a row where Cruz went up and won them from Jamie George's low flat throw, as you say, and that gave them a foothold in the game.
Yep.
And then the attacking kick rather than the long kick forced a mistake from Hoggy, and Hoggy will be put his hands up. You know, it's millimetres from a great decision in terms of letting the ball go over the field. If he picks the ball up in the full as quick as he can, he's under a lot of pressure. But I think if he's a time again, I think he'd probably get to it as quick as he could. I don't think he can do a lot with it. He's on his left foot going towards the left touchline with a lot of pressure. It's a case of just getting the ball.
I was thinking it wasn't a great kick. Now, as it turned out,
it wasn't a great kick.
It was a well weighted kick,
but it wasn't a really, I don't think it was. It bounced outside the 22 and can he run 23 metres.
So you should have dealt with it earlier.
I think you try and get as early as you can.
Yep.
But
tell you what, he was relieved when he went to the referee and the referee signalled it was a scrum. So I don't think he was convinced that he'd got downward pressure. But
I can totally understand what he was doing.
Yeah.
And as I say, it's an inch to mil or whatever difference, and it's a dropout 22. And you don't really want to concede a scrum anyway. You know what I mean? So he's not going to carry the ball over his line.
No.
It's just a good tactic from England. Not specifically well executed, but a good tactic for forward and well chased.
And I mean, that scrum under the post 5 metres out, that was Scotland's best
rock
scrum,
solid, eh? Wasn't it? Never
great, great scrum, but then unfortunately then leads to the opportunity and England took it well. I mean, it was a power game. Now Scotland will be disappointed, they'll be hoping to make them work a bit harder than that, but at that stage it was probably only ever going to take one score because it was such a hard game to get any points on the board.
We can hear now from Scott Cummins, who we spoke to immediately after the match at Pitchside on Saturday, and also hear from Gregor Townsend and Scotland captain Stuart Hogg from the press conference after the match.
It was a pretty horrible game. Obviously, you know, they maybe just controlled the game a wee bit better than us, and you know, there's some key areas obviously we can still work on, but tough game, obviously a tough loss, not what we want. So.
And we're standing here in the chucking down rain. What were the conditions like out there?
It's hard to even say which side had the wind at any point. You know, it was just swirling about. So, you know, but they played the conditions well. You know, we could have maybe done that a bit better, but we did do it in some games, some parts. But, you know, we just Cork and Chalk a bit better?
Yeah, look, I think as a group, I spoke to the players about just reflecting on the last two games. They're obviously really disappointed. They worked very hard to get into a position of 3-3. This wasn't going to be a game with many points scored in it and lots of errors. And they worked really hard to get a chance to winning or a chance of getting ahead. But we have played two very good teams in the last 2 weeks. Ireland, what's 5 or 6 years, they've only lost one game at home in the Six Nations. Today we played the World Cup finalists, who have a set piece and probably game that is already based a lot on kicking that they can adapt to these conditions. It took us a while to adapt to it, but I was proud of how the players did adapt to it and really took the game to England in the second half. Had a 3-0 for a long time. Obviously, that game could have gone either way, and that's something that we have to take as a group, that we play two top quality teams. But when we go to our next game, we're going to make sure we're better. And if we have chances of winning our next game or our next three games, we're going to do all we can to find a way to win.
Yeah, devastated. Again, it was a huge challenge for us to exit and get down the right end. Unfortunately, the ball just didn't set up. And it was tough to take. I put the boys under a wee bit of pressure, and unfortunately, we didn't manage to get out of there. So, you know, I'll take that on my shoulders, take on the chin, and be in a position to say that I made a mistake. I'm not going to shy away from it. I did make a mistake, and these things unfortunately cost us. Yeah, look, we're hurting now. But again, on Monday when we're back in together, we'll get back and look forward to our next job. I think for us now is to realise and accept where we've gone wrong and start learning from these costly errors and make sure we're in a great place when we play against Italy in a couple of weeks' time.
So we're talking about the fixture that should have been Sunday here at Scotland, but just with the weather conditions, from a safety point of view for both players and spectators, it was decided to move it to BT Murrayfield on the Monday. And I know you did take some of that game, and the conditions were unbelievable. It started off well, you were saying. But
yeah.
The
sun was out at the start. That was there's a picture just before the anthems of the sun kind of hitting the north stand, and it looks great on picture, but it was windy, it was blustery. And then after about 25, 30 minutes, the snow started to come on. It was bitterly cold. And then the second half was a whiteout. You know, it was long, you know, almost all of the second half was a complete whiteout. And that was where England just got their control, their dominance, their fully professional side. Came out totally dominant in top 53-0. That was disappointing for Scotland. But they've made progress. They feel as if they've closed the gap. It was 80 points to nil last year down at Twickenham, down in England. So they've made, they're making progress, but a difficult one to take and just, obscene conditions, really.
We can actually hear from Scotland captain Rachel Malcolm now.
It's probably not ideal preparation. You know, obviously we get up yesterday morning completely up for the game and ready to go, but there's sometimes just nothing you can do about those situations. And I'm really proud of the way that the management team have come together, in Scottish rugby in particular, to get everything sorted for us to, you know, have a hotel to stay in, have somewhere to play and even get a training session in yesterday. So I think, you know, the girls have shown how tight-knit we are to deal with that kind of situation and be up again for the game today. In terms of last year and to today, the scoreline I think today probably was favoured England, even in terms of the game itself, because I think we probably actually deserved a better scoreline than that, so the performance was probably better than the scoreline showed, whereas last year it probably did fit the game. So I think in terms of where we're at, we definitely are moving forward. It was a better day at the office for us compared to last year. Still lots of stuff we need to improve on, and I think playing against one of the best teams in the world, they're going to expose those things, and that's really good for us because we're going to learn from it. And, you know, set piece in particular today, the second half was really tough for us. We were struggling to get any of our own ball, which without the ball you can't do much in attack. So that's a big work on for us going into Italy in a couple of weeks. And but I've got no doubt that the girls will bounce back from this, and we'll keep working hard towards the next game.
Pro 14, both Glasgow and Edinburgh back in action this weekend. Glasgow home to Zebra and Edinburgh away down to the Scarlets. A lot of players will be looking forward to getting a bit of rugby. Not just the players coming back from international duty, but it's been a big gap for the players from Glasgow and Edinburgh. They've been on holidays for a while, but I'm sure they'll be looking forward to getting a runabout.
Yeah, a bit of time off for the last round of fixtures was the final round of Europe at the end of January. So I think it's 3 weekends without a fixture. But you know, all the players have been training. They would have had 10 days off, maybe 12 days off to recharge the batteries. I think I was talking to Kenny Murray, the Glasgow coach. He said it was 22 consecutive weeks in a row that the players, or certainly the coaches, have been working. So it is important to recharge. And this time of the season, it's almost like a mini pre-season in terms of top up in fitness, top up in, you know, blocks of work that you need in order your team to be successful, but also setting goals and mini goals for this period, which becomes really important. There's there's games that are a bit fractured really with the Six Nations players coming in and out, but there has to be a real clear focus for the next 5 or 6 weeks or so. Glasgow are sitting fourth in Conference A, 7 points behind third place Cheetahs. So that has to be the target for them to hunt them down.
Cheetahs had a very good spell when Glasgow were off, taking the maximum points against the Kings. Now, they almost lost that first game, but they didn't. A few Glasgow fans and players, I'm sure, looking at that game. So they've come out with 10 points, and as you say, have now gone 7 points ahead of Glasgow. So yeah, it's key to try and close that gap.
Yeah, that was their 2 games in hand. So they've now both played equal number of games. So it is a shootout. It's a head-to-head, really, between those two. Ulster are another few points above, and then I think Leinster are 23 points ahead or something of fourth place. So it's unlikely you'll get a home semi-final by closing 27 points on Leinster. But important time, important part of the season, and it is the kind of preparation for the final assault on the season, really. This, as early as it appears, you know, early February, that has to be the mindset. And then the other side, or the MA, Edinburgh travel to Scarlett Saturday, 3 o'clock, and that's a battle of the top two in Conference B. Edinburgh sitting top, 3 points ahead of Scarlett in second, and then Munster are one behind that further in third. So it's tight at the top of Conference B, but Edinburgh on the road to the Scarlets, they've had a bit of success down there in the past. Scarlets will be, I assume, fairly heavily affected by the Welsh players as well, whether they get some back or whatnot. But
it's going to be a massive game for Edinburgh to go and win. It'd be a big big statement as well when they've got so many guys involved in the
Their building
team.
Blocks have been so good this year. Edinburgh, in terms of their defence, their set piece, their ability to open up their game a little bit on previous seasons. So they've just added another layer to the game, quite rightly top of the conference, and we hope they can pick up points in the road.
Now, one thing we didn't cover, Chris, when we were talking about the Scotland game was Finn Russell, and there's been more come out this weekend. Finn doing an article on Sunday, and then Gregor has come out and replied to that. Now, Gregor's adamant that there's still an opportunity for Finn to come back in, but to his point, it's about making sure that he adheres to the team standards. The standards are not just set by the head coach, but set by the leaders within that group. But it's not good at the moment, is it? It's not good that this is a distraction or potential distraction for the players in the middle of a Six Nations.
No, it's not. It's far from ideal. And I think, you know, it's difficult for everybody to deal with, really. But obviously the statement that Gregor put out early in the week is, I assume the end of the statements, and it's the ball seems to be in Finn's court. If you truly want to play for your country, then you'll make the sacrifices and you'll buy in. If you don't, which there's nothing wrong with not desperately wanting to play, then you don't make yourself available. It's so sad, really, and it's dominating a lot. But I don't think, in terms of the players' preparation and how they've been affected and how they're preparing, it's had a huge effect on them within the camp. Obviously, with somebody that's talent, Finn, there's one or two things he could maybe bring to the game and the games that have gone already, or there's one or two things that Adam's maybe done better than Finn would do in the games so far. So it's these are all hypothetical, but the players seem to be driving the standards and driving what they believe gives them the best opportunity of success. But I know Finn, I like Finn, I get on really well with Finn, and I'd like to see him in contention.
I think we all would. We want to see him back in a jersey, or as you say, in contention to get that jersey. But to your point, it's the ball's in his court, and you know, there's always moments, always times that you won't necessarily disagree with a coach. Or,
there's
or
a few of those.
There's been a few of them over the years. But it's, Stuart's talked about it, it's a team standards.
Yeah.
That at times you need to make sacrifices to fit in. And yes, you can try and change things internally, and if you don't disagree with it, you need to have an open forum. But him being in Paris doesn't do himself or the team any good. Now, if he's got that appetite that you talked about and that desire, then he needs to make it work.
Like every team, every squad, every season that I was ever involved with, be it school rugby, amateur rugby, club rugby, international rugby, professional rugby, not everybody gets on.
No.
And there's a level of respect between everybody that's tested to the absolute maximum. And I can think of some stand-up Barneys I've had with head coaches at international level, and I've been in the wrong, I've been in the right. But you have them, and you find a way to work in terms of the best of both parties. Like, every team I was ever involved with, there's been a lot of individual management of players, but it's individual management of players to within the guidelines that are set.
Yep.
Like, if everybody is managed differently, I would be managed different to you. You don't want an environment where nobody's challenged or nobody's challenged each other. You need that, and everybody says it, and that's what happens. Every team I've ever been involved in has had that. But it's a moment where when you do agree, and like maybe you don't agree, but you're made aware of what has to be in place, you back it.
One of the really exciting things that's happened in Scottish rugby over the last year is the involvement with Old Glory. It gives us the opportunity to send players and coaches and rugby experts out to Washington to learn from us, as well as us learning from them. Now, one of those rugby experts who's currently out there is rugby operations manager John Manson. John, how are you?
I'm well, Al. Just sitting in the middle of DC, enjoying my time out here. Weather's terrific. The sun is shining, and it's not as wet as Glasgow, so I'm delighted.
Well, one of the things we should cut off straight away is the fact that you're not really John Manson to anybody. You're Pumps. And no doubt we'll fall into that in the podcast. So give us a bit of an explanation why you're called Pumps.
Well, first thing, can I just say that I tried to lose that name when I came over to America. I thought, when I come here to DC, I'm going to leave the name Pump behind. I'm going to be professional. I'm going to be mature. However, within a week, everybody's calling me Pump. The whole organisation now calls me Pump. So it's followed me over. Mungo Mason, who was at Scotland Sevens and played for Edinburgh for a period, is here. So he's big friends with Glenn Bryce. So Bryce, he sent him a message saying, "How's Pump getting on?" So of course that was Pump. What are you talking about? So it spread pretty quickly amongst the group. So there was a bit of hilarity initially. Scott Hastings many moons ago christened me that. It was just a tour nickname. I've got a rather large cranium, as everybody knows.
you've got a head like a pumpkin.
A head like a pumpkin, basically. So it's a perfect description. So it was shortened to Pump. Or as you call me, Al, Pumps. The only person that calls me Pumps, plural.
I know.
I don't know where that comes from.
Pumps.
Crazy.
It's Pumps.
No, it's not a pumpkin, though, is it? It's a pumpkin.
No, exactly. Well said, Mossy.
Yeah, I'll help you, Pump. But you're settled in okay? A big move, but settled in and enjoying it.
Aye, loving it. I mean, it was a challenge, and it still is a challenge. I mean, when you talk about a startup business, I mean, this is exactly what we're doing here. We starting from the ground up, literally. We're picking the squad from nothing. The facilities, the infrastructure, the support mechanism, everything around about the club didn't exist before December last year. So we're piecing that together as we go, which was one of the main reasons I came over. You know, the challenge of doing that and being involved in that. I mean, you would never get an opportunity within the rugby environment to build a club from scratch. So yeah, that's what we've been doing.
And you kind of went through that as a player. You were a pro when the game turned pro initially. Is it quite similar to that? Obviously in a managerial role now, but. Can you see similarities that players will go through what you went through in, say, 96, 97 time?
Yeah, that's a great point, Mossy. Yeah, absolutely. And I think when I look back now, I sort of feel sorry for the management team behind the scenes back then.
Yeah.
Because when that started, as you know as well, I mean, there was nothing to fall back on. Nobody knew what professional sport or professional rugby was at that time. at least now I've had the advantage of being around professional environments for a few years, and I know what I want to achieve in DC. But back then, you know, we were sort of making it up and taking every day as it came. So I mean, it's a great comparison, and I think about those days often.
Pumpskin, it's worth digging into it's worth digging into that experience you talk about there. How many years did you spend as rugby operations manager at Glasgow?
So I came to Glasgow in January 2015, halfway through the season they won the championship, and I'd been with Scotland Sevens since 2011. Before that, and then under 18s for 3-4 seasons before that. So I've been around professional rugby management for probably the last 10 to 15 years.
And I mean, would you describe yourself as an integral part in that championship season then?
You made the difference, Pump.
Absolutely. I mean, the captain at that time, I can't remember his name.
He
was struggling, so I was brought in to try and motivate the players. And I think I achieved that. I think I've still got the picture
and
the medal in the house.
No doubt you have. I seem to remember we did a book and your photo was in it more than anybody else's. A former international rugby player as well.
That is correct. I managed to sneak on the pitch in 95 at Twickenham, the Grand Slam decider. I managed to get on for the second half and live out the boyhood dream. So it was a great occasion. A long, long, long time ago now. But obviously something that you'll never forget and you're always very proud of.
On the Calcutta Cup, obviously you had a game at the weekend, the first game of the season for you guys. But did you see the international back here?
Yeah, we were watching it. So our game, we're a few hours lag behind you. Mm-hmm. So we watched all the rugby. It's quite good over here because we're 5-6 hours behind Europe. All the rugby happens in the morning, so you can get up, have your breakfast, you can watch all the rugby games, and it's still lunchtime, so you catch everything, which is great. So yeah, we watched the game, a frustrating game for everybody. The weather looked absolutely
horrific, terrible.
I thought we were going to steal it and we were going to win it, but it just wasn't our day, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was a tough day at the office, that. We spoke about earlier just that the conditions completely dominated the whole thing, but your game as well, you were against the NOLA New Orleans side at the weekend, NOLA Gold. First game of the season, a defeat first half. They're a more established team, but how was it for your players? Was it a surprise? Was there encouraging signs, or was it just get on the field and put a mark on them?
It was disappointing. Obviously, we were well beaten. I mean, it's a new experience for everybody, you know. But you basically travel the length and breadth of the country here. And as you say, we were down at New Orleans, and they're a decent side. They've been around for, this is their third season in MLR. They've just moved into a new stadium. They've moved into a baseball, minor league baseball stadium where the Baby Cakes used to play in Louisiana. So they've moved out and they've moved into this beautiful stadium, and it's a beautiful grass surface. So they're making real strides forward on and off the pitch. But for us, I mean, we struggled a bit set piece wise. And we made a few mistakes and never really got back into the game, so we're disappointed with the result, certainly.
Yeah, it was 46-13. You felt it. In terms of travel, there's an East Conference and a West Conference. For your travel the weekend to New Orleans, how long was it, and how did you get there? Was it trains or flights or?
So we're flying everywhere. So we fly to every venue. As you say, we've got an East and West Conference. So we're in the East Conference. Mm-hmm. So we play the East Conference home and away, mm-hmm. and then we play the West Conference either home or away.
So similar to the Pro 14 last year.
Just to give you an idea, so you've got the New England Free Jacks in Massachusetts, New Orleans are down in Louisiana, mm-hmm. there's DC, which is us, you've got New York, you've got Rugby ATL from Georgia, and then you've got the Toronto Arrows mm-hmm. from Ontario. So they're all on the East Coast. And on the West Coast, you've got Austin, you've got Colorado, Houston, San Diego, Seattle, and Utah. Mm-hmm. And those journeys are pretty big. I mean, those are 5-6 hour flights, so they're pretty big. And we travel the day before and we come back the day after. So it's similar to Pro 14 travel, but just a bit.
Just longer.
Maybe another 2 or 3 hours on the flight.
Where are you, John, with the squad? Fairly established now, or are you still looking to bring more players in? Or?
So we've got everybody in that we've signed. We have a rather big signing arriving tomorrow morning. Mr. The Beast arrives. He's flying in from Dubai as we speak. He arrives at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. His visa took a bit of time to get sorted, unfortunately. And once Beast arrives, we will have everybody. So we've got basically a 37-man squad, but 10 of those guys are they're called special contracts, so they're like local club players who just augment the full-time squad. But we've got everybody in now. As soon as the Beast arrives, that will be our full complement.
And is any truth in the rumour you're going to be doing a bit of scrummaging coaching with the Beast as well?
Well, I might give him a few pointers, you know. I watched his last game in the World Cup there, and he was moving a bit to the left and walking around, so I need to have a word with him about that. I don't want to be giving away any penalties over here.
On that, I'm joking there, but what is your day-to-day at the moment? You're talking about how you're building a club, so I imagine there'll be all sorts going on. I know that I FaceTimed you, was it last week, and you were at home and you had all the GPS bibs hanging up over all sorts of different bits of furniture. So, I mean, that's just your character as well. You'll do. I was almost said whatever it takes from the old days, but you'll get roll up the sleeves and get involved.
100%, Al. I mean, and at the moment we're all like that. You know, as I say, we're basically starting up a club here. So, the connections I had in Glasgow and the connections I had at Scottish Rugby, where I would just. I'd look over my shoulder and there'd be somebody there that could help me out and somebody there that could do a job for me. That just doesn't exist here. You know, I'm sort of building those relationships and looking for those people that can help. So you're right. I mean, I'm washing the match strips. I'm going shopping for the boys to get snacks and Gatorade and water and all the rest of it. You know, just purely because, one, the staffing numbers are pretty low at the moment, and secondly, everybody else has got their own jobs to do. I mean, the coaches need to coach. The commercial guys need to sell tickets for the games, you know. So it's a bit of a one man show. But it's not a surprise. I knew that would be coming. And as you say, I quite enjoy that side of it. You know, I quite enjoy getting onto the ground level and getting stuck in with the boys.
So you talk about the ground level there. How excited from what you've seen already are you about the potential and where it could possibly go to? Can you see it going and becoming a majorly successful league?
Listen, absolutely. When I came over to DC in the summer for the exhibition season, I came over for 3 weeks. And that was the first thing that struck me was the enthusiasm and the excitement from just sports supporters, not rugby supporters, just people that follow sport. Mm-hmm. They just love sport over here. You know, and if you put on a decent show and a decent sporting occasion, they'll come and support you. I mean, even after the weekend where we got pretty well beaten, the fan support and the fan comments on social media is just incredible. You know, they still back you 100%. Whereas, as we all know, if we have a bad game in Scotland, I mean, there'll be somebody telling you that you've had a bad game. You know, so that's not really their nature over here. They're really positive. They get behind the team. And like I say, they're really excited for a professional franchise to be starting in DC. I mean, it's a sports mad area, and it's just incredible how they get behind you.
And you've mentioned Mungo Mason, obviously, who we know well here. He was involved with Edinburgh, tough bat role player, the Beast, obviously. But a couple of names I picked out as well. Threaten Palamo, who plays in the midfield for the US, he's a pretty hard running centre. And Kieran Hearn, the Canadian, who's been a long time involved in the Sevens. These boys, I assume, will be quite crucial to building the squad around, but there's a bit of talent there as well, isn't there?
Absolutely. So Threatens, he's our go-to man in the squad.
He runs hard, eh?
Yeah, he's a big man, you know, and he was the, you maybe know this, but he was, a long time ago, he was the youngest guy ever to go to a World Cup in 2007 for the US. So he's been to three World Cups. Kieran Hearn, 70 caps for Canada, you know, played for the Sevens team as well. Two guys that are 31 and 34 in the centres, you know. But you've got guys like we've got Mikey Fiaghi, the hooker, who's played Mitre 10 in Auckland. Danny Tusatala, Auckland Mitre 10, number 9, also played for Samoa Sevens. And Jason Robertson, who's just played the Mitre 10 for Bear Plenty. So we've got a lot of experience there. And there's other guys as well. We've got Declan O'Donnell, who's New Zealand Sevens a few years ago, again, Mitre 10 player. Big Appy Nakatini, Al might have played against him a few years ago.
Right, he showed him up. Didn't remind
another one. So we've got a sprinkling, and I think we've done that on purpose. Yeah. We've got a sprinkling experience through there. And we've got the thing for us is we've got a really exciting back division. Mm-hmm. All of those, most of those players I mentioned are backs, and we've got some real flash players in the backs. But unfortunately, we just with the result on Saturday, we never got those guys the ball, you know, which was really a downfall.
Any space for an aging fullback in a second row slash? Well, I say eight.
Well, the social scene over at eight. Did you say?
Eight.
There was only one second row could do that, and that's Mr. Doddy Weir. You're just not in his league. So listen, there's a great social. The other thing about DC is the social scene's incredible. There's over 100 rugby clubs here, you know. There's tens of thousands of people play rugby, and they just love it, you know. So there's clubs all over the place, which again is a surprise to me. It's a bit of a, it's under the radar a wee bit, you know, until you get here and you actually start thinking about it and you speak to people.
And have you came across any familiar faces? Obviously, there's a few. Scott Murray was out there.
There's a guy called Jerry McDonald who was a prop for Alloa that's stayed here for a few years now. There's a guy, Simon Boyer, who actually played with my first club at Hillfoots, who stays in DC. There's another guy, Chris Cowan, who was in the Navy. And I played with Chris at Dundee for a few years. He played Scotland in their 20s. He's down south for DC. And there's another guy, Big Duncan McNaughton. I don't know if anybody remembers Big Dunkey. He was a second row at Dundee.
Dundee's one of the part owners
up in Toronto.
Have you spoken to Big Scott, as Mossy mentions? Have you spoken to Scott Murray?
I spoke to Scott when I first came over, he got in touch with me about Big David Tamalau. Big David Tamalau, who was at Glasgow, as you know. He's now with San Diego, so I had a few chats with Scotty about Big David going there, so he's moved over there to play.
Are you keeping half an eye on what's going on back at Glasgow? Are you keeping a close eye on Kenny Brown, who's going into your position as rugby operations?
Absolutely. I've been speaking to Kenny quite a lot. He's doing a great job. I'm glad he decided to take the job. And I'm glad they've found a bit of a forum. You know, it was a wee bit ropey there. A few games, a few disappointing results just after I left, but they seem to have found a wee bit of form again. They were really unlucky in Europe. I mean, ultimately the home game sort of scuppered them against La Rochelle. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what's happening with the appeal with Saracens, but I hope that gets appealed. I hope that goes through. I'd love to see them getting a wee bit of success there.
Yeah, well, that's Zebra on Friday night for Glasgow. And you guys are you away to Seattle?
No, they're coming to us on Sunday, so this is our first home. This is our first home opener, so it's a big day for the club. You know, the first home game in the club's history, so it's a massive day for us.
And they were last year's winners. They won it last year, didn't they?
Yeah, we're playing the two-time champions. They've won it back to back the last 2 years. So the games don't get any easier for us, unfortunately. But listen, it's great for the. When I came over here, it wasn't just about DC. I wanted the whole MLR to be successful. Mm-hmm. Like you said earlier, Al, every club needs to be successful here. It needs to be a great competition. So I don't mind getting tough games and playing against great teams. That's what it's all about. It's up to DC to then get better and get to their level, you know, and that's what we'll try to do. So as I say, the champs are coming here on Sunday, and that'll be a really tough game for us, but that's what it's all about.
John, what is the best way to follow how you guys are getting on over the course of the season? I know you're active on Twitter and on social, but...
Yeah, so if you just go on oldglorydc.com, the website has got all the information on the club, it's got all the social media handles, it has the schedule for the season, it has the TV networks that show the games. So yeah, you'll get all the information you need there, and you should be able to follow us quite easily. Our social media team is really good, actually. They do a great job for us, and they promote us really well.
Brilliant. And it would be fair to say, to sum up, John, you're enjoying yourself, aren't you?
Loving it, Al. I mean, as I say, I was pretty cushy in Glasgow, you know. It was sailing along quite nicely, so it was time for a wee challenge. So
you had a lot of people doing an awful lot of your work in Glasgow, I know that.
Well,
from when we were involved together.
Well, I took you from where you were to where you are now, so you were just under my wing.
I'm not sure how to take that.
Nah, anything you miss?
I'll tell you what I do miss, and this is, I'm quite enjoying just speaking to you guys normally, you know, because when I speak to the Americans, I've really got to slow down, and I've got to really pronounce my words, and it's hard work. They're getting used to me slowly, but I quite enjoy when somebody from Scotland phones me, because I can just speak freely.
So what did you say there? Mossy's joking it there in the background. How's your what bike sessions going? Isn't it? Big part of your life back here.
You know what? Huh? I've arrived here on the 28th of November last year, and I have done not one single training session since I arrived.
Oh dear! I mean, we've got a book running back here.
Well, I'm doing all right. I'm busy. I'm keeping myself late. I've got a gym in my apartment block. I've got a gym in my apartment block that's open 24/7, and I've never. I look in it every day when I walk past it.
Is it busy?
Aye, not with me. So I look in the door when I walk past. I've started to wave to folk that are in there. I've never spoken to them, but I just see them every day. I'm going to join them at one point.
Brilliant, John. I think we've got a feature here. We need to get some regular updates from you and how things are going in Old Glory. But genuinely brilliant to catch up with you, and great to hear that you're doing so well. Best of luck this weekend.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it. I'll pass on the regards to the squad, and hopefully get a decent result and get a flyer at home.
Thanks, Pump. Good to speak to
you. Okay, cheers.
Cheers, buddy. Cheers, Pumpkin. Bye-bye.
Cheers, bye-bye.
Some man, eh?
Some man. Great to hear from him, isn't it? Sounds as if he's having a lot of fun over there.
Yeah, I played with Pump, actually.
You've just aged yourself considerably.
He's a youngster. No, I did. It would be about 90. It was late 90s. I was still an amateur player, still at university, playing with Gala and Glasgow Caledonians, as it were then, had a couple of pre-season games. Tommy Hayes, the standoff, and Luke Smith, the standoff for South Africa, were both injured, and I came in and played a couple of games, and I also played against the New Zealand Maoris during a November international window with Pump for Glasgow Caledonians, and he was as chirpy and as cheery then. Really good value, really good fun, welcomed me as a young player. Threw a wee bit of abuse at me, obviously, which was fine.
Abuse everywhere he goes.
But it's great to hear that he's committed to making a difference in what's a really kind of important project.
Yeah, I mean, he's got incredible knowledge, not just on the field. He capped international. He's won cap against the English. He always had the picture up. He was a team manager at Glasgow with me. And he's just got a great manner about himself because he's got so much knowledge. He's dealt with so much over the years.
Well, he's been involved as a player, as you say. He's been involved in the dawn of professionalism in Scotland, which will help, I believe, in his role now. He was team manager of the Sevens for a long time. He's obviously been in with the Bricks at Glasgow Warriors for a long time. And the beauty of him, he's never changed.
He doesn't change. He's a good man. Like, he's just the type of guy you want to be in his company. I mean, I've been involved in things that have gone reasonably badly wrong at times, and he's managed it brilliantly. So, a safe pair of hands and a great guy to be over there. As I say, sharing some of his knowledge with Old Glory, but I'm sure he'll come back having learnt a lot as well. Thank you very much for listening this week. It's been a big week in rugby, and hopefully we have scraped away at some of the stories you've been looking at. One other thing that's been happening is the Royal Bank Rugby Force launch this week. For more information on how your club can get involved, follow Royal Bank Scottish Rugby on Facebook and Instagram, and @Royal Bank_Rugby on Twitter.